blah, 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 cocaina, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I thought to myself, I know I don't speak Spanish, but I'm pretty sure I can figure that one out. Are those kids really just having a casual chat about cocaine in the front row, right underneath the nose of me, their math teacher, while they're supposed to be taking a test? Blah, 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 they continued, cocaina, blah, 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 blah. Yep, and there it was again. So, how do I handle this one? I wasn't sure. I wasn't really a high school teacher. I mean, technically I was, but it was my second week on the job. And just a couple of months prior, I'd been sitting in boardrooms, delivering PowerPoint presentations, and talking through company growth issues with a room full of people twice my age. Now I was the elder in the room, somehow responsible for the goings-on inside these four walls of this here school. So I cleared my throat and spoke up. Hey guys, we're taking a test here. No talking. Oh yeah, sorry, Mr. K, one of the kids said. He picked up his pencil. And then his head tilted back toward the other kid and I heard a slightly quieter, blah, 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 cocaine, blah, blah, blah. Oh, there it was again. Well, my first approach was fruitless, so now what? Well, how would you handle this? I mean, if you were in week two of a new job teaching high school, essentially zero teaching experience, and you had a couple of kids thinly cloaking their conversation about cocaine by speaking a language you don't speak because you took French when you were in school? Oh, c'est dommage, n'est-ce pas? What would you do? That's an honest question, right here in the beginning of season two of this podcast. What would you do in that situation? I'm curious, especially if you aren't a teacher and you have as much experience as I did in that moment. I can tell you what I did next, but I'd rather start by telling you why I'm telling you this story in the first place. And it has to do with what season two of this podcast is all about. You see, if you looked end to end at my career to this point, you'd see someone who spent the bulk of it in a very different place. Most of my career has been in business and leadership. I've been a consultant and advisor to big companies and their leaders. I've been a corporate executive. Throughout that time, I've witnessed something that frequently happens. And as far as I can tell, nobody is immune to it. What happens is you get on a track. This leads to that, then that leads to that. And over time, you can find yourself in a kind of routine. There are good routines, healthy routines, ones that can provide helpful structure, consistency, but I'm not talking about that kind of routine. I'm talking about a kind that is a form of being stuck. I like that word, stuck. I think it describes a wide variety of places we can find ourselves. I see it with the teams I work with too, and definitely with entire organizations or companies, just caught in the same loops, continuing to do things the same way to the detriment of results, but also to the detriment of everyone's well-being, sometimes even their sanity. Stuck. This is a place I seem to visit every few months on one level or another. There are a million ways that we can get stuck. Sometimes we're moving at a pretty good clip, or so it seems, but we're actually stuck. We're becoming patterned, or we're stagnating in some way. Our growth may be slowing, or it's only happening along the same old set of dimensions. It's like our world or our view of it begins to narrow in some fundamental ways. The world is full of possibilities, and same with this complex creative creature known as a human. There's immense potentiality, and both of these things are in essence limitless. But during one of these stuck periods, these two limitless things become narrow, they become confining. Get up. Eat the same breakfast, go to the same job, deal with the same problems, pursue the same desires we've been pursuing, feel the same feelings that we usually feel. This loop of confinement is tremendously common, and it often goes unnoticed for quite some time. It's like the boiling frog analogy. It just gradually sneaks up on you until one day, maybe you hit this moment and you're like, ouch, I'm actually kind of stuck. I confused all this busyness and movement with real progress. In actuality, I've become wedged inside a narrow groove. The question is, what do you do when you hit one of these points or phases? You can wait it out. A lot of people do that. Or you can shake things up. Blah, 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 cocaina, blah, blah, blah. All right, Mr. Suit and Tie Consultant. an advisor to CEOs of the Fortune 500. How are you going to handle this one? Truth was, I had no effing clue what you do. But the beauty of that moment is I was so far outside the track and pattern I'd been in for the years before that, that something new had to take shape from this experience. New synapses, new possibilities, new worlds. "Hey guys," I said, "are you really having a conversation about drugs right in front of me while we're supposed to be quietly taking a test?" "We're done with the test, Mr. K," they said, not the least bit fazed by having been called out. "Still shouldn't be talking while other people still have to finish their tests, but that wasn't really my point," I said. "You mean talking about drugs?" one of the kids said calmly. "Oh, we do this with all our teachers." I must admit, I stood there a bit dumbfounded. Was he telling me this as a way of defending the behavior? Like when my son says, "Mom says it's okay"? Was he just stating a fact? Or, as I eventually believed to be the case, was he attempting to genuinely make me feel better? His way of saying, "Don't worry, man, it's not you. You're doing just fine." I admit, I did feel some reassurance in that moment. Thanks to that kind-hearted high schooler, my feeling as an incompetent imposter of a math teacher settled down a little bit. So I have at times gone to great lengths to punctuate my experience with big pattern interrupts, changes in direction when things get too stuck, like going from the boardroom to the classroom, from business to wellness, from PowerPoints to personal training, from managing teams to facilitating personal transformation. Now, I want to be extra clear. You don't need to go to the extremes of taking a year off to do your equivalent of a high school teaching stint to get the kind of pattern interrupt that I am advocating. What's called for depends entirely on the person and the circumstances. But I do believe that it is a matter of principal importance to notice when we are getting too deeply grooved into certain ways of being in our lives, in our work lives, and to do something about it. Or our sense of spirit, our energy, or our well-being is going to suffer the consequences. Most people have experienced this in one form or another, like when we stay too long in one place, past that point we know we should move on, and we feel that growing weight of stagnation. We aren't learning anymore, or we're steeped in the same feelings that have clearly soured past that point of no return. And if we don't move into a different role or a different company or maybe a new industry or perhaps even an entirely different career, we will pay a heavy price. What's actually happening here is that the job itself, the team or the organization that you're a part of, has actually become stuck in a way. Your growth is bumping up against the edges and you're feeling that limitation, that confinement. In that moment, at that time, you have two choices. You can drive change in the team or the organization itself, or you can move on. Driving change in a team or organization is possible, though few people attempt it. In a later podcast, I'll share a personal story about one of the times I attempted this, since I have this tendency to become passionate and invested, and my years of advisory work in change management almost conditioned me to be a change catalyst. But know up front that it may not go your way, despite your best efforts. And you need to be honest about when the signs are telling you it's not to be, so you don't get in that, "I'll give it a few more months" loop that can turn into years. I've been there. So then you're at option B. You need to move on or risk paying a heavy price, your very well-being. Of course, there is that option C, staying well past the expiration date of the experience. And if you haven't done this yourself, I'm sure you had that person in your life who complains and complains, but never seems to make the necessary change to a new job. But needing to change jobs is just one example of many confining routines and patterns that form in our work lives and rob us of our well-being if we don't address them. These patterns can show up in 1,000 different costumes, like how we keep finding ourselves overworked and stressed time and again, or how we continue to tackle our workday in the same way, day after day, despite flagging energy levels, or how we keep avoiding the difficult conversations we know we should be having, or how we don't practice asking for what we really want, or how we keep holding out hope for advancement or some other shift to finally break us out of a prolonged period of dissatisfaction. If something suboptimal keeps happening in some repetitive way, that is a clue to look deeper. The examples I just rattled off are all patterns that rob us of the inherent joy and fulfillment our work life can provide. And the kind of pattern interrupt they call for isn't changing jobs or careers, but it's changes to the way we approach the one we're in. Changes that move us forward in the ways that matter most. I see this as one of the primary paths I'm navigating in my own life. And equally, it's a thread woven through the way that I seek to serve others through my livelihood. It's why I keep being drawn to work that involves guiding people or groups or teams in the direction of this ultimate aim that I call well-being, because I've seen how critical it is to tend to well-being as an end in its own right, as well as because of how inextricably linked it is to our ability to do our best work and to do work that matters. So what's all this got to do with cocaína? I hear some of you wondering. If I zoom out for a second, I have to acknowledge that what I do today for work bears almost no resemblance to my stint teaching high school. That wasn't the sort of pattern interrupt you can convince yourself was on some level going to feed my forward progress in the various domains I ended up pursuing since then. I learned a lot during that time. But how, for example, do you make a connection between what I'm doing now and, say, that time that I sat across from a woman dressed from head to toe in butterflies, writing with her butterfly pen, who told me that to be effective in my new role as a teacher, I needed my thing, like how Mr. Smith is always the Southern genteel type addressing his students as sir or ma'am, or how she quite liked butterflies. I don't know. Mothman never did quite figure that one out. Still, in retrospect, even your diversions make sense in hindsight, if for no other reason than that they gave you the distance from the groove of your routine that you needed to be able to see your current situation with greater clarity and to spark the action that was called for to move you closer to where you belong in terms of your state of being. So where do you need a pattern interrupt, big or small? Where are you a little too deeply grooved, a little too rigid or routined? Where has your view or your thoughts or your feelings become a little too repetitive, a little too narrow in range? What change, big or small, do you sense is calling you? I don't ask you these questions as some person who has all the answers or who's somehow transcended all this, by the way. I've overstayed my welcome in roles. I get stuck in repetitive thought patterns and feelings. I made certain mistakes 100 times and then made the same ones again. This is what makes our work lives so rich and engaging from the standpoint of personal growth and, if I may be so lofty, self-actualization. I've always found myself drawn to role models who have obtained a certain equanimity, a certain peace of mind and contentment in the most difficult of circumstances. I think of people like the Dalai Lama or Nelson Mandela. I mean, I still get chills anytime I think of Nelson Mandela. Isn't it funny how decades of inner work, not to mention his commitment to fitness, 90 minutes of working out in a 7-foot by 7-foot concrete cell, no equipment, no headphones. Isn't it interesting how his approach to what I might call self-mastery not only yielded this profound inner well-being and groundedness and wisdom and humility, but it enabled him to pull off the win of the century? Think your company is hard to change? How about getting rid of an entire government behind apartheid in one lifetime while you're behind bars as a political prisoner? Talk about an incredible leader, not to mention an incredible human. So I think of these people who achieved this level of equanimity and inner well-being amidst challenges that are so far beyond what most of us will face in our lives. And then I think, in a similar way, if you can discover a sense of ease and joy and true well-being amidst the tremendously challenging environment of your work life, that's powerful. That's a well-being that is stable enough to permeate the rest of your life. And that's on top of just having your work life, which is one of the biggest parts of a lot of our lives, itself be fulfilling. So this is the central exploration of season 2 of this podcast. Each episode will be a brief deep dive into a different aspect of the achievement of true well-being and fulfillment in your work. No frills, just me, a microphone, and my stories and reflections from the journey itself. Season 2 is itself a pattern interrupt. For me, perhaps for you too. I am Mike Kavanaugh, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of this podcast.